Hello and welcome to the Wild Cornwall podcast, brought to you by Cornwall Wildlife Trust. Today's episode is all about wild ponies and conservation grazing. We travel to Penhale Dunes to meet the ranger John Cripps. So John, welcome to the Wild Cornwall podcast. It's great to have you. And what a great place we're here at today at Penhale Dunes.
Yeah, it's a fantastic site, isn't it? And yeah. We are seeing it at its best.
Beautiful, yeah. February day.
Yeah, it's not always like this. Beautiful blue skies, sunshine and offshore winds. It's
But you're sometimes out here in the rain.
Yeah. Sometimes it's 50, 60 mile an hour winds, driving rain, and you can't shut the gates because the wind's too strong. You know, after you back the truck up to it to shut the gates. It's crazy,
but not today. So what's your job with Cornwall Wildlife Trust?
So I'm Penhale Dunes Ranger, so sole responsibility for the dunes at Penhale, which is quite a lucky position in the reserves department because everybody else has got multiple reserves to look after. I've just got one, but it's quite a big one.
So. And yeah, how big is it then?
So the whole site of special scientific interest and special area of conservation is 620 hectares. So it's divided in ownership. We don't actually own any of it, but we manage bits on behalf of the Ministry of Defence. So they own about 350 hectares, I think. And then Perrin Sands Holiday Park, we manage their publicly accessible dune for them, and that's about 110 hectares.
Right. So not all of this is accessible to the public?
No. So the military-owned land, just the coastal front where the coast path runs along, is accessible. So you can get around the edge and you can get good views into it, but you're not allowed in the middle. Okay. And then the land at Perrin Sands, known as Gear Sands, that's all publicly accessible. And then there are public footpaths across land owned by the golf course, Perrinporth Golf Course. And then there's a bit of dune at the back of the Watering Hole pub that's owned by the parish council. So there's access through there as well.
So tell me about the dunes. I mean, what makes them special as places?
I mean, one of the main things is the size, you know, the sheer scale of uninterrupted high quality sand dune habitat. So you've got sort of fixed dunes, flower rich areas of short rabbit grazed turf that's full of things like bird's foot trefoil, wild thyme, kidney vetch, those sorts of things. That's the habitat that the silver-studded blue likes. So that's one of the key features. You know, we did a count a couple of years ago, just wandering around for a day and counted over 5,000 silver-studded blues.
Really?
Yeah, so that's one of the nice sort of features. There are dune slacks, so seasonally wet areas, which have really sort of specialist plants in them, things like shore dock, which is another one of the site of special scientific interest designations. On the face of it, it looks like any other dock, but it's significantly rarer. And if you get a lens and look at the seed, the seed's a different shape. So, but annoyingly, that's one of the plants that hybridizes. So you just think you've got your eye in, and then it looks a bit like another dock, and it all gets confusing.
Okay.
So as well as that, there's sort of more straightforward ones like marsh hellebrine. So okay. A really nice orchid that's found in the wet corners of the dunes. Marsh fragrant orchid. And then we get lots of autumn ladies' tresses, so another orchid that favours short turf. There's loads of those on the public access side of the dunes, so the bit behind the holiday park. And then early gentian is another one. Tiny little flower with a little purple flower, lovely.
Reptiles?
Reptiles, yep. Slow worms, adders, grass snakes, common lizard, loads of adders. Normally find adders nearer the coastal front, so good thing to see on the coast path if you're looking for that sort of thing. And then grass snakes, so the seasonally wet areas, the dune slacks, we get the grass snakes more around them because they can swim and they look for like frogs and things to eat. So yeah, it's really good for reptiles.
And what sort of, looking ahead, what things are you doing to improve the site here?
So one of the sort of big things that's come to the forefront recently is realising the importance of open sandy habitats in dunes. So with sort of lack of grazing and things like that, and also atmospheric nitrogen deposition. So all the pollutants we've put up in the air, coming down in the rain and in the atmosphere, helping to fertilise vegetation. So things like brambles and blackthorn and sort of scrubby species have been becoming more prevalent over the years, and are closing up the sort of bare sandy habitats, and they're the habitats that are specific to sand dunes. So having bare open sandy areas means that sand dune specialist species have got somewhere to live. So one of the things we'd like to do soon is to create more of those areas, which might appear a bit extreme because it requires big machines, but it's being done to improve the habitat in an appropriate area and an appropriate scale. So we might, you know, create bare areas covering a few hectares, but in the wider scheme of 620, a few hectares of bare areas is sort of heading in the right direction, but not too drastic.
So that's going to keep you busy later on this year,
yes,
I guess.
Definitely, yeah.
And I mean, today we've been out checking on the ponies that you've got here. Tell us about the ponies. You know, you've got 24 of them. Why have you got them here? Why have you brought them into this landscape?
So yeah, we've got 24, a mixture of Dartmoors, Dartmoor ponies, Shetland ponies, and Exmoor ponies, and basically their job is to sort of slow succession. So succession being the process by which the vegetation moves towards sort of woody, scrubby. So if you let the grass carry on growing, it gets thicker and ranker, bramble comes in, blackthorn comes in, and the dunes start heading towards a sort of blanket of woodland in an extreme sort of case, if you like. The ponies come in and they graze areas a bit tighter, and they keep the niches open for sort of flowering plants to make use of. So they just slow the spread of woody species down and add a bit of balance to the system. So if we didn't have them here, basically, I mean, on this site, we've been really, really lucky. We've had rabbits here for hundreds of years. And the one thing that's kept the dune in relatively good condition is rabbits grazing short turf areas. They don't favour flowers particularly, so they've left the flowering plants alone. So we have a really nice flower-rich turf, which the butterflies love. And loads of insects love, and what the ponies do is they'll help hopefully expand the areas and the niches that the rabbits can make use of, and that sort of combined grazing effect keeps the habitat in good nick for the widest variety of wildlife possible.
And cattle as well. Mm. Tell us about the cattle.
Yeah, so we've got Nancarrow Farms organic North Devon cattle grazing here. So organic, really useful, because that means the dung is then living, if you like, so worms, insects, bugs and everything can make use of the dung. The cattle graze in a different way to the ponies. So ponies nibble the grass down nice and short. Cattle are a bit more sort of ragged in their approach, if you like. They use the tongue a bit to rip the grass, so they create a more varied sward height, so a much more varied height of grass across the site, meaning that different species that favour different sort of heights of grass have still got a niche. So different plants that require the grazing to different heights have still got a niche to sort of grow in. So having a combination, so rabbits, ponies, and we do get some wild sort of deer coming through as well. So we've got deer browsing more woody vegetation. The ponies in winter will eat gorse on the headlands. They're able to manipulate the gorse and bite off the sort of green tips, and it's a great source of nutrient for them. So they all do something a little bit different, with the main aim of sort of keeping the habitat as diverse as possible and sort of slowing down any sort of woody growth and sort of non-dune sort of species, if you like.
And does it take a fair bit of management, these different species here, and moving them into the right spot? And
yeah, so the ponies, they come on in autumn and they graze through autumn, winter. And we check them periodically for welfare reasons. So that's the main thing, is to keep an eye on them to make sure there's no issues. And occasionally they might need their hooves trimming. So none of them are shod. So they need a hoof trim every now and then. Although the Exmoors, if they've got enough access to sort of hard surfaces, they can sometimes manage the hoof growth themselves. So our Exmoor ponies have been able to go up and down the tarmac road through the training area, and that seems to have worked for them.
To help them. Yeah.
And the Exmoors are they're a wilder sort of pony here, the ones we've got. So they will stay on site year round. So they just need the checks and seem to be doing very, very well and quite robust. Whereas the Shetlands and the Dartmoors, they just need a bit of trimming every now and then. And then they move between compartments. So when one area's had enough grazing, the grass is really tight, we'll move them on to the next. And then when they're done here in the winter, they go to my colleague Andy Collins in the Mid Cornwall Reserves, and then they do the rounds at all of our heathland sites, so Chiverton, Venton, Gimps, places like that.
So they're quite well toured.
Yes. One of the sort of main attributes of the Shetlands and Dartmoors that we've got is that they will go in the back of a trailer when asked.
So that's an important criteria as you select them.
Yeah. So they need to be wild enough to not approach people, but tame enough for us to be able to get a head collar on them so that we can foot trim them, and also they will go in the back of a trailer.
So you're being careful in terms of the ones that you put out on the coast path, that then they're not too tame and go and hassle people, is that right?
That's right, yeah. So the last thing we want is them sort of getting aggressive and pushing for treats, you know, sniffing people's pockets, that sort of thing. There's certain ponies that wouldn't go out on the coast path and that need to be in solitary, so they behave.
Yeah. Back in the past, we'd have had wild horses, I presume, in Britain. Is that what these ponies are doing? Are they fulfilling that kind of role that wild horses would have had on our landscape?
Yeah, they're fulfilling a general large herbivore sort of role, yeah. So, you know, we've domesticated everything, hunted it, shot it, whatever, you know. So there's the only sort of large herbivore we've got left roaming, you know, is the species of deer, really. So, yeah, they are mimicking what would have been here before, yeah, to try and add a bit of balance back to the environment, yeah.
If you're an ordinary member of the public and, you know, you're listening to this and thinking this is a really important place, special places like this, what could an ordinary person do to support this kind of habitat?
So, first of all, obviously, be a member of the Wildlife Trust. but in this particular instance, we're very lucky to be part of a big national project called Dynamic Dunescapes. It's not got a lot of time left on it, but we've still got lots of activities happening through that project. So joining in, we're on social media, so we've got Cornwall Dynamic Dunes Facebook page, and it's Dynamic Dunescapes. There's a website for that, so you become involved in some activities. And we also, I have a volunteer task around the last Thursday of the month every month. So we do useful stuff, habitat management work, repairing fences, basically helping me manage the site.
So, is that a whole day of volunteering?
Yeah. So it's you know, the weather's not always like this, But generally, I try and find, you know, a good task to do in the weather conditions, and we get some good work done. So I've got a core gang that helped me with that, which is great. Being considerate in how you use the site is really useful. So the publicly accessible area of the site, the habitat there is every bit as good as the habitat here. But we do, you know, have quite a lot of recreational use, and so there's a lot of dog walking and things like that, and skylarks nest on all over the dunes. So being aware of the wildlife that's around, and maybe controlling dogs during nesting season a bit more would be great.
John, how did you get into conservation? Is this a lifelong interest, or did you somehow fall into it?
I started on the path of trying to be an electronic engineer, and the maths got really difficult.
Got in the way.
So I had some really good careers advice. I spoke to a careers advisor. They said, what do you like doing? And it's generally being outdoors in nature. I just hadn't worked out at that age that there was a course and a job in it, you know. So I managed to switch courses at uni and didn't look back, really. Yeah. So I've been working in sort of Devon and Cornwall in this sector for my entire working life.
And seeing you out here looking at that lovely view that we've enjoyed this morning, I can see it looks lovely.
Yeah, it's fantastic place to work. Yeah.
Final question, John. I want you to imagine that you are stranded on Lou Island for a year, and you're allowed to take three things with you. You've got a book, a luxury item, and a year's supply of one kind of Cornish edible.
Luxury item, well, it would have to be items. Lou Island, I don't know if there's any surf that breaks off the back of it.
I don't think so.
But you do occasionally get a wave in Lou, so if I could have a surfboard and a wetsuit, and failing that, I'd probably have a snorkel and a mask and a wetsuit for a bit of snorkeling around.
Appropriate for a marine nature reserve. What about your Cornish edible?
Cornish edible. Well, I'm a bit partial to a saffron bun.
Very nice.
So it might be a saffron bun. Although there are a lot of really nice restaurants in Cornwall. So any sort of Cornish seafood produce from a meal from one of the nice restaurants would be...
I don't know if delivery go to New Island, though.
No, it was that, or maybe some fresh mackerel on a barbie. Yeah. That would be nice.
And how about your book?
Book. To be honest, it would probably have to be an ID guide, because if I'm spending all the time on the island, I at least ought to know exactly what every species is that's on the island.
You've got a year, that would be a useful thing to have.
Yeah, so marine ID, you know, for snorkeling, and terrestrial ID as well.
Brilliant. Well, John, thanks very much for your time this morning, and good luck with all that lies ahead.
Thank you.
Cheers.
I hope you enjoyed finding out all about Penhale Dunes and the wild ponies that graze there. If you want to know more about the Dynamic Dunescapes project, then head over to our website. You'll find the link in the show notes. That's all for today. Goodbye.